Ladies and gentlemen, we made it. We made it to the end of part one of Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City.
I'm sad.
When I say we, I'm talking about me, Dan Reichard, and the woman who just said I'm sad. That is Bianca Reichard. That
is
my wife.
That's my slogan. That's my catchphrase.
The woman who's...
I'm sad.
It's great. It really gets people fired up. You'd be like the worst indie wrestler ever. You come, I'm sad. That's your catchphrase, all your shirts. Yeah, we're done.
We are
done with, this part of Terrace House. You are already asking me, like, so can I just keep watching this?
Or, yeah, like, I think we agreed that, so we got through the first part, and I think we're gonna do the second part at some point.
Yes, I want to keep it open for us to return to Terrace House, if people want it. I mean, you just got, like, a month's worth of Terrace House, so.
I want it.
I want
about
it, too.
What about what I want?
That's actually the most important.
Really?
Sorry, folks listening, but, yes, Bonk, yes, you can do whatever you want, obviously. You're a...
Well, I wouldn't want to watch it without you.
I would watch with you. Here's what I would offer up. Is that I've heard that Boys and Girls in the City is one of the better seasons, and we've watched part one of that.
Mm.
So I would say if we're going to watch one off panning the stream and not talk about it, if we just want to get back into something else, maybe we watch one of the like seasons that's supposed to be pretty good. Like I heard Aloha State sucks.
I heard
so
that
not
sucks.
That one.
I heard the other really good one is Boys and Girls. Not in the City, next door or something? Yeah, I think Next Door.
Okay, there's Next Door, and then there's like a Boys X Girls in the City, which I think was the original one before Netflix picked it up. So I would say, maybe let's save...
My question is, I mean, and this has nothing to do with panning the stream at all, but you have a lot of travel coming up, and I'm going to be alone at home. Would I be able to freely watch these other seasons of Terrace House?
You do not have to ask permission.
I know, but
you can ask whatever you would like, or watch whatever you would like.
I would not watch it if you wanted to watch it with me.
I do like watching Terrace House a lot.
So can you just give me a definitive answer right here,
everyone
to hear?
Watch whatever you want. Give me some updates and stuff. Between the stuff we do weekly for Panning the Stream, between the Dragon Ball Z we watch every week, and, you know, if we happen to have free time, we have movies and stuff and a whole backlog we're trying to get through just for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, you can always watch whatever you want.
Okay, I just don't want you to feel bad or left out.
Hey, I'm going to be gone for a while with travel stuff, so, you know, go hog wild on that.
Okay. Well, also, I won't have anyone to vent to about it.
That's true. You can email me.
Okay.
But if folks want to email us at panningthestream@gmail.com and let us know kind of what the general thoughts are on, like, you know, we've seen some, like, ranking type stuff and what the best seasons are or whatever. So kind of your thoughts on, like, if we were to cover another season, like, which one you would like to see the most.
I mean, maybe I think the most obvious idea would be the latter half of this season.
That does make the most sense.
Because I want to see where it goes with these people.
I do too. So yeah, maybe... Okay. So we'll say tentatively, at some point, if we return to Terrace House, we will save part two of Boys and Girls in the City.
Return to Terrace House.
And return to it. Perhaps. No promises. But... For now,
so yeah,
let's wrap this up. We got episodes 15 through 18 of Boys and Girls in the City, part one on Netflix. And I would say that it's not, there's not a big climactic thing here. Like, I feel like the closest we got to, like some major, major climactic, dramatic things happening was maybe around the time Makoto was leaving.
Yeah.
And that was still when, like, the early days of, like, Uchi and Minori kind of starting to date like that.
I think the thing is, like, we had so much time to get to know those characters and for tension to build up and, like, storylines to build up. And now with all these new people coming in, it's kind of a clean slate. And, like, you know, it's not just that there's new people. It's that even the old people haven't had a chance to form relationships with the new people. So there isn't, like, many opportunities for... you know, interesting things to happen. But there were some little juicy tidbits, some sweet succulent nuggets in these episodes.
Definitely some arcs here that are pretty interesting. So one of them here is just kind of the ongoing tale of Minori and Uchi.
Mm.
And man, you talk about not dramatic. This is kind of like the example of just like a relationship that it's not, they're not fighting, they're not at each other, down each other's throats.
It just seems like passionless, and it seems like a relationship of convenience. They both are probably attracted to each other and happen to live in the same house. Even Uchi says that, like, you know, if they stay in the house, it'll be easier for them than if they moved away. And, like, Minori has said that she doesn't even feel like she's in a relationship.
Yeah.
The other housemates prepared for them a traditional Japanese room.
Yes.
Which I had no idea what that meant. I assume it's just when there's a bed on the floor. I'm not sure. It looked traditional. It looked like the rooms in Shenmue. That's my point of reference.
Yeah, I think that's probably our greatest point of reference. I've been to Japan, and I still think of Shenmue when I think of
Japan. Yeah, well, it is set in Japan, that game.
That is true. Mm. That is absolutely true. You know, I kind of think...
The mirror!
I think both of these, I was about to say characters, but they were just human beings.
They're regular
Both of these actual human beings that exist in the world in 2018.
And are still like in their mid-20s.
Yeah, very young, active, whole lives ahead of them, human beings. I think they both would be difficult in a dating scenario, even on their own, like with another more outgoing partner. Whereas you've got these two people, these two personalities that are very just kind of like... mild, non-confrontational, but won't really speak up and won't really talk about things. So together, like, you just kind of see them just being in the same room and they're both just kind of there. You never really see passion between them at all. You don't see really anything on the spectrum of emotion between. You don't see them just having a joyous, great time together. You also don't see them fighting or anything. They're always just kind of with each other.
Yeah, you know? Like I said, it's just kind of devoid of passion. And I think one of the biggest issues is they're just not having conversations. Like even Minori says, you know, he'll say, tell me how you're feeling about this thing, and then she'll start to talk about it, and then he'll just take it to a really heavy place.
Yeah.
I think it's like just two passive people.
Yes, that's a good way of putting
it. Yeah, I don't think it's, I don't think it's a long-term thing. And
no.
The most interesting part of this, of course, was the pursuit. And now that they've both kind of embrace the fact that they're in a relationship together, it's gotten a little boring.
So, absolutely. Like, yeah. We don't see it on screen, but there is a point where they get sushi together, and Minori says that things just got kind of awkward, and that's when she starts talking about how everything gets kind of heavy with him.
Yeah.
How you could just say the most benign thing, and he just kind of just gets heavy and weird about it. Mm. But that said, they both have, like, their own Star Wars hoodie, so, I mean, they're probably compatible.
That's true.
Right?
That's
true. That was kind of an interesting thing where they're talking about, we kind of time-stamped it, and he was excited about seeing Star Wars, and it would have been around the time Force Awakens was coming out. But yeah, still just really no passion there outside of the passion for sleeping on the fucking couch.
Bastards. But that's why they have the traditional Japanese room now, so they could sleep together.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think that was prepared because the first note I have on this set of episodes is Minori's on the couch again, but then the next one is Japanese room. Mm. So,
maybe they fixed that. So what kind of sex do you think they're having in there?
I think they lay on their sides, both of them. And facing each other on the bed, and they stare into each other's eyes, and they reach their arms straight out and rest them on each other's shoulders, and they stare unblinking at each other for 20 minutes and then fall asleep.
Okay.
That's my thought.
All right.
That sound about right?
I was thinking more, yeah, okay, pretty much. I know my mom listens to this, so.
Yes. And these are actual human beings we're talking about here. Maybe we shouldn't, yeah, who knows. So they talk for a little bit about just kind of the communication stuff and whether this is a thing of convenience. And Uchi's got some worries about, like, if they leave the house, if they still see each other.
And one of the things that I guess they learn in these episodes is that the show has been extended for an additional, I don't think they know how many months.
It seems like Netflix probably ordered 18 episodes at first, and then it's just like, oh, okay, well, we're extending it. But, they don't seem to know.
Right. So that throws another wrench in it, because it's like, well, if we know it's gonna end, that's one thing, but if it's gonna go on and we don't know how long, we should probably just leave.
And also, I wonder if there's some awkwardness at this point, because they are, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but a couple more people leave, so like at this point, if they stay, they will be the two only like original cast members that are still there.
And
is that like staying in the dorms like too many years and suddenly you're the old guy at the dorm or something,
like a National Lampoon's Van Wilder.
Oh, was that? I never saw that. Was that kind of the idea, is that he just hung around too long?
I saw that film with my brothers and my father.
A film.
At the movie theater that used to be outside of Garden State Plaza, prior to the Garden State Plaza undergoing a drastic renovation.
Very specific New Jersey mall information.
subsequently they got rid of the Borders and they put a giant AMC. Uh-huh. And we've been to that AMC together.
Uh-huh, we saw John Wick 2 there.
Yeah. prior to that, the movie theater was detached and it was not an AMC. It was some independent thing. And the owner of the theater used to be a student of my grandmother's. So we were able to get into the movie theater for free whenever we wanted, nice. Which sounds like a great treat. However, anyone that wanted to see a movie there could get in for free because they just walked the fuck in because there was never anyone at the front desk.
That's surprisingly easy to do. As someone who worked at a theater for years, like, it's kind of hard to just stop people, A, from just walking in a weird side door and going underneath like a barrier during a busy time,
yeah.
Or more frequently just paying for one ticket and then seeing movies all day.
Have you ever had to enforce the no outside snacks thing? Have you ever had to stop?
No. In fact, in almost every movie theater I've heard of, mm-hmm. It's the thing that people, like customers, worry about more than movie theaters actually enforce it. Like, no one's ever going to do a bag search at a movie theater. You could bring in a fucking birthday cake.
One time when I was at the aforementioned AMC, I bought a coffee from the Dunkin' Donuts, or should I say Dunkin' now, and I went to go see a film, and the guy at the front that was, like, you know, ripping my ticket stub told me I couldn't bring it in.
Oh.
So I chucked it. But anyway, I saw National Lampoon's Van Wilder at that movie theater. And the only thing I remember about it was there was this dog there that in the movie that had like huge fucking balls.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate dogs that have balls because it's like, just get your fucking dog fixed.
Yeah.
But that's all I remember from that movie. And anyway, that's what I thought of because you said, you know, someone who should have left the dorms and that was his character.
Because so right at the dog balls.
And then it made me think of the dog balls.
Man. I would not have guessed dog balls is where you would
take whenever that. I see a dog with balls, I always give the owner a dirty look. Unless it's like a flat-nosed dog, because sometimes they can't go under the anesthesia because of their flat nose. They have trouble breathing. So it's like, I'll cut you some slack.
All
but
right.
Anyone else, it's like, come on, dude. Who are you trying to prove?
All right. I'm going to try to segue from dog balls to the love triangle of Armand and Arisa.
Get your animals fixed.
Yes, that is a smart thing to do. So yeah, we've got kind of a love triangle thing going on here between, well, mainly Armand and Arisa.
Love triangle is a very strong way to put it, Dan.
Yeah, okay, so basically we've got Armand and Arisa who are into
each
other.
It's a love oval.
And then we've got Mizuki outside of the oval kind of trying to break in.
And same with Yuki.
Right, he
so
comes in a bit
like
later
here.
So
kind of like a soft love square.
Okay, it's a soft love square.
Like with rounded
We got an SLS.
Edges.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because like Mizuki was the one who was kind of hitting it off first with Armand. You know, they had that really long day. They went to the beach and got food and went shopping and all that stuff.
And I'm always rooting for Mizuki.
Mizuki is great. And it seemed like I felt very happy for her when it seemed like things with her and Armand were going to work out. And then...
Well, wait a minute. I think you were definitely jumping the gun on that because they had only gone on one like date. And was it even technically a date?
It just seemed like a really natural, like, they seemed to just have kind of an effortless good time together in a way that, I don't know, it seemed like it could have been more than friends eventually, you know, like, it was one day, but it seemed like a very good day, and it seemed like they might both be smitten with each other.
Right, well, okay, so then Arisa comes along, as you all know, and then Arisa and Armand really hit it off, and it sucks for Mizuki, but I will say, plus side for Mizuki, she has this fucking banging-ass haircut, courtesy of Uchi.
The short haircut?
Yeah.
She, you know, well, the feelings are in the ends.
The feelings are in the ends, and I think she knew that, so she sacrificed those ends. But usually I am not a fan of, like, short hair on girls, but I think she looks great.
Yeah, it definitely worked.
I think it helps if you have really nice hair to begin with.
Yeah.
I think that kind of goes for anything across the board. Your hair will look nice if you have nice hair.
Yeah, that seems like a net benefit there.
And you will look pretty if you are pretty, no matter what length your hair
is. It definitely helps,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyway, so good for her. She has this edgy haircut now. And yeah, I feel for her. You could tell it was tough. And I think her kind of, I don't want to say being rejected. I feel like that's too strong.
Yeah.
But being passed over for Arisa by Armand was kind of the catalyst that made her decide, well, there's nothing here for me. I'm going to leave now.
Yeah, and she makes one last attempt at this when she can kind of tell that Armand and Arisa are hitting it off. So there is a point where she finds out, like, oh, you guys are going to go to this mountain and you're cooking food for him? Like, great, great.
Going kickboxing together?
Yeah, and she at one point in the kitchen just says, like, you know, yeah, go have fun. And then she just goes to bed. Mm-hmm. And so it just seemed like she was kind of pissed off. And then the next morning, she kind of makes her last shot. And she's sitting there with Armand. And she's
eating,
like,
a completely undressed salad.
Yeah, it does not look like the best thing to eat first thing in the morning.
You would know about that.
Dude. Eurovision time, 2 years ago.
One time we were watching Eurovision. This was not this past Eurovision, but the Eurovision prior, uh-huh. right? It was last year.
This is the first Eurovision we watched together, yes.
And, like, we were having just, we made a fucking day out of it. We ordered food and stuff, and Dan got sushi, and it came with this salad.
In a little styrofoam bowl.
Yeah, and you know how, like, salad at, like, a Japanese restaurant is usually just, like, iceberg lettuce and, like, the cherry tomatoes and stuff? It's a very simple salad. It's not, like, mescaline or anything like that.
What?
You know, it's an iceberg. It's kind of bland.
Mescaline?
Mescaline, like a or arugula or another.
Oh, I thought mescaline was like some hardcore drug.
No, mescaline or mescaline. It's like the, it's kind of a bitter.
Oh, leafy. I never heard of that.
Maybe I'm saying it wrong. I don't fucking know. I'm not a lettuce expert. All I know is that you get this kind of salad anywhere you go, and it usually comes with that delicious ginger dressing. So Dan was for some reason eating this salad. And it was wet because I guess they had washed it, which is good. But he didn't have any dressing on it. The dressing just remained in a separate container, untouched. And he looked at me while I was eating this bland, cold, wet lettuce. Iceberg lettuce, mind you. The most flavorless of all the lettuces.
Yes.
And he just says, "This brings me no joy." And I've always remembered that because it was such an odd thing to say while eating salad. It's like, first of all, the reason it's not bringing you any joy is because you completely neglected the dressing. And secondly, if it's not bringing you any joy, then stop eating it. You looked so miserable. I've never seen anyone look so miserable while eating
salad. Let me explain a little bit here. I typically never eat any kind of side salad or anything that comes with anything.
You usually
at a restaurant.
Get it to
me. Yes, and it usually, like, I never order things that come with side salad, so I was already unprepared for that arriving. But then, yes, I knew that there was.
It caught you off guard.
It did. I was unprepared for that.
So you didn't know what to do except to eat it without putting them.
Well, let me elaborate. There was a little container.
This is what I love that you do. You try to, like, explain all your weird idiosyncrasies away.
I'm not, it's not going to make sense afterwards, but I at least just want you to understand
right,
what was happening
proceed.
In my dumb brain.
I want to understand.
Okay, because there was the side thing of dressing. But I had ordered a bunch of food. Like, again, we made a day out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I ordered was, like, some little, like, dumplings or something that would, like, you would dip in something.
Hell yeah.
And so I thought that was like, oh, this is like an optional little thing to dunk my dumplings in. I did not realize it was for the salad. And so I just thought, like, you know what? I'm eating a bunch of bullshit. I might as well scarf down the little salad they sent me for something healthy.
Well, here's the issue with that. First of all, iceberg lettuce.
I know. No nutritional.
Devoid. It's like
it's
eating hard water. And secondly, you didn't notice that it didn't have any seasoning. It didn't have any flavor. And you had the separate container of dressing just waiting to be applied to that salad.
I think you can attest to the fact that a lot of times, maybe most of the times, damn near all the time, when I am confronted with something, whether it is a movie or just anything I hear or see in my entire life, I tend to just kind of just
a movie or anything at all.
Yes. I just see the thing, it goes into my brain, and it registers as the thing I see on the surface.
Are you a psychopath?
No. I just think that I tend to not analyze things. I tend to just, when things happen, I'm just like, oh, that's the thing that's happening. And then,
wow.
Like, that's why I never understand symbolism. Like, as soon as, you know, whenever I'm ever talking about a movie or anything, and somebody's like, oh, yeah, the symbolism was just so obvious and overt and everything, I'm always 100% of the time, I'm like, wait, what are you talking about?
Remember when we were watching Mother?
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, that I did not understand.
We were
there's any symbolism.
Mother
in that.
On the plane, and we paused it so Dan could go pee. And I said something about, like, the symbolism. I mean, like, the movie is weird as fuck if you don't know that, you know, Jennifer Lawrence represents Mother Earth, and, you know, what's his face is
Javier Bardem.
Yeah, is like Jesus or whatever, and then all the people there are humanity destroying the earth or whatever, some bullshit like that, some wankery. But anyway, if you don't understand that, the movie is just complete nonsense. And I asked Dan something about that, thinking that it was obvious and that he knew about it, but he was absolutely stunned by this revelation.
Well, you said something about the symbolism, and I was like, wait, what? Because, like, to me, it was just like, oh, the acting's good, and the directing seems good, and the house is crazy. Wonder what that's about. And then, like, and then you said something about symbolism, and you explained it to me. And then the thing is, once I'm confronted with the thing that's actually what it's about, what the symbolism is, then I can piece together everything. Like, oh, shit, I didn't even think about that.
You don't get that immediately, but you're incredibly smart once all the chips are laid on the table for you.
I just
but
don't
let me
ever
ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead.
When it comes to things that maybe aren't symbolic, but are instead things that have a deep meaning, are impactful, can you appreciate it then?
Give me
like
an example.
For instance, okay, you didn't watch this, but I watched that documentary Into the Abyss.
Right, Werner Herzog.
Yeah. And I was so moved by that because it was just so wild to me that, you know, you hear about murders all the time, but this was this one triple homicide, which granted is exceptionally horrible, but it was this one murder that just had so many, just the way it affected everyone, and then like the hope at the end of the tunnel, you know what I mean? Like, it was just so moving, and I just, it stuck with me, and it like hung over me for a few days after watching it. And I'm just wondering, like, do you ever have that feeling, like that takeaway, that things that stay with you and make you like think of things a different way?
I mean, there's information that I will gather from things that I will remember when I'm in certain scenarios or things like that, but like, I don't okay, for example, you know, not to get too far off track, so I won't go super into it, but like there's a documentary called Dear Zachary, and I watched it, and it's tremendously dark. It's obviously a true story. Yeah. It's a documentary. But at the end of it, I remember like laying in bed and thinking like, I wish I had not watched that so late at night, because it was so, it's horrible what happens in that.
Right.
And at the end, I was kind of like having trouble sleeping because it was just like, man, that kind of fucking rocked me.
Right.
That is unbelievably dark.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's happened before, but like, I don't know. I used to talk to Ben Hansen all the time back when Breaking Bad was airing.
Yeah.
And I remember he would just be like, I don't understand how people can like binge that show if they're trying to catch up. Cause like, I watch one episode and I just feel like emotionally gutted for so long. And it's like, I watched every episode of Breaking Bad, most of them a couple times. And it's like, yeah, it's dark and stuff, but I don't ever feel like, oh, like soul-wrenching, like, oh, I need to recover from this. Like, I just think this is a well-made piece of Hollywood television.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Did you know about The Red Wedding before seeing it on Game of Thrones, the show?
People had called it The Red I had heard the phrase Red Wedding before, and they're like, oh, wait till you get to The Red Wedding, wait till you get to The Red Wedding. And so, but, you know, without... It's one of those things where people think they're not spoiling something. It's like, I'm just going to say, wait till the Red Wedding.
Yeah, or when people say, like, oh, it has such a great twist at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I hate that shit. And so as soon as somebody said Red Wedding and it's going to be a big deal, I'm like, okay, there's going to be a wedding and then a bunch of people are going to die or something. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, the red's blood. It's not that hard to figure out. But it was, you know, still a super effective scene.
Yeah.
But again, the credits roll and I'm like, all right, let's go play Mario or whatever.
It's interesting. It's one thing that, and we were talking about this the other day, how like you and I have such different tastes in music, because I gravitate towards things that make me sad or reflective, and you like things that are more like get you worked up or like
that
excited.
I want to drink a beer.
Yeah, like inspiring stuff. And,
yeah,
you know,
Freebird. Like Freebird's my favorite song ever.
I'm down for that kind of stuff every now and then, but I prefer much darker, like sadder stuff or like brutal, like heavy shit.
Yeah, I'm all, like, I want songs, like, I can't tell you how often I listen to the entire Rocky soundtrack.
Okay.
Like, just all the time, because I always, like, just Living in America and the training montages and No Easy Way Out and all this stuff, because it just makes me think of Rocky, and Rocky inspires me, and so it's just like, yeah, I feel great. I've never, first of all, I don't really ever feel sad.
Yeah.
Like, if something tremendously sad happens, you know, obviously I'm not a monster, I can be like, oh no, that's really
I know,
sad.
I've seen you.
But I get frustrated, I can get angry if, like, the harmony remote's not working right, but, like, I genuinely don't really get sad. And so, like, the idea of watching something or listening to something and wanting to feel sad, I just don't think I can relate to that, because I just want to feel, like, pumped up, or I just want to feel, like, hey, this I don't – it's very surface level, you know?
I get it. It's really interesting. Like, your, I guess, detachment has advantages too. I mean, I could see why people think that would be bad. But, like, on the flip side, whenever something happens between you and I that, like, warrants a discussion, like, if it's something that makes me emotional, you being kind of – being able to see over it beyond, like, above the muck of emotion and all the – you can just see through things with clarity. And because of that, you're always able to talk about things – so just you cut right down to it. And like, that's one of the things whenever I talk about you, I always say, like, and whenever I'm talking about anyone with relationships, I always say, find someone who knows how to have a conversation and not just argue, because your ability to have a discussion instead of having it turn into this screaming match.
I don't think I've ever had a screaming match.
And neither have I. But, you know, things like small things, like, you know, we've been in a relationship for a while now. And I think it's natural in relationships, long-term relationships, for things that are, you know, seemingly minuscule to maybe lead to a, like, kind of a fight. You know what I mean?
I guess, like, if you get, like, two volatile personalities, like, to kind of bring it back around, you talk about, like, Minori and Uchi, mm-hmm. that's the opposite, where it's, like, nothing ever happens there. And then if you have two people that are very volatile on the other end of the spectrum, I could see how a tiny thing could just turn into a thing and balloon out. Mm-hmm. So are you saying it's good to kind of have... Are you saying that we're kind of a mix of things, like you're more emotional and I'm less?
I would say, I mean, it's like one of those things, like what I was getting at with, like, you know, people being in a long-term relationship being more volatile. Like, for instance, you always hear the stereotype about, like, a woman finding, you know, a sock mm-hmm. on the floor. And it's like, God damn it, he keeps leaving his socks
right,
on the floor.
Right.
And then that just results in a huge fight. Like, if I ever got angry at you leaving your clothes on the floor, which I have gotten upset mm-hmm. about that before,
absolutely.
Not enough to scream at you. It's just like, God damn, I tell him all the time.
Yeah.
Instead of arguing and meeting me at that point of anger, you just talk about, like, you just
or I just
talk
go,
about.
Oh, sorry, I'm an idiot.
Well, I mean, yeah, with something like that, obviously, but if it's something bigger, like, instead of matching me, which a lot of people do when they're, you know, in a heated thing with someone that they're in a relationship with, you just want to sit down and talk about it and be like, well, let's discuss this. What is upsetting you? You know, here's my point of view. I want to try to understand where you're coming from. That's what's so amazing, because you are so detached in some ways, and not to reality, but, like, you're also so empathetic because you try so hard to understand where I'm coming from when I'm acting in a way that's, like, maybe irrational or whatever, or when I get defensive about things. Like, you're just... You never want to win. You always just want to make things right. And that doesn't mean appeasing me. That just means, like, trying to solve whatever the problem is. Like, that's I think, the core of it. You always just want to solve whatever the problem is. And I think because of your tendency to be that way and my tendency to be the way that I am, you know, and maybe it's reflected in the fact that I gravitate towards, like, heavier music or, like, more depressing music or whatever, I think that's maybe why we work so well together, because, like, you know, and I don't think I'm unhinged or anything.
No, not at all.
I just think, you know, I'm definitely more emotional about certain things than you are, but the fact that you're always so grounded in reality and don't let yourself get weighed down by all the muck of, like, this ambiguous just emotions, because a lot of people let these emotions build up, good and bad, and they build up and build up until they're this big nebulous thing that they can't even talk about, because it's like, well, what can I even say? I don't have words to express it. Instead of expressing it, I just am going to feel this way. And instead of just letting me feel away, you always want to talk about it. And that's, I love that so much about you. And I think that's something that someone should always look for in a partner, is just, does this person, like, actually want to have a discussion with me, or is this person just going to dismiss me? Because I've had, like, my previous partner before I started dating you, if he was ever upset, like, he wouldn't even have a conversation. It was just like, I don't feel like talking about this right now.
I don't get that.
Yeah. And you know, it was enormously frustrating. And it just makes me appreciate so much. And I would have appreciated it regardless. But I don't know. That's just, it has some curious side effects in that you really aren't, like, maybe as affected by things as I am. Maybe you try to avoid, you know, doom metal or whatever.
I don't try to avoid it.
You know what I mean. Like, you don't necessarily gravitate toward. But on the plus side, and it's a huge plus, you're always making me understand what my issues are. You never want to fight. You always just try to bring things down back to earth and, like, hey, let's look at these problems objectively and let me understand how you're feeling and you could understand where I'm coming from. So yeah, I mean, I don't know how we got on this big thing, but
well, I just feel, and thank you, that was very nice things you said there.
Well, I love you.
I just feel like it's, you know, if there's anything that is rearing its head as a possible issue or a point of contention or something, I think it's just to everyone's benefit to, like, you know, if you're upset about something, mm-hmm. my instinct, and again, it's not something I had to train myself to do, this is just kind of how I deal with things, mm-hmm. is I kind of stop and I listen to what you're saying. And I think, like, okay, let me see her perspective here. And now let me think about what I'm doing. And let me really do kind of a self-analysis here and see if I'm in the wrong. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I am. You know, there are times where, you know, I disagree with you and I think that I did something for the right reasons mm-hmm. or whatever. And I'll defend myself calmly, if that's the case, and explain my reasoning. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's just an extremely useful thing to be able to look at your own behavior and realize when it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I can see why that would be annoying. I can see why the other person would have an issue with that. Mm-hmm. And so I'll admit that I was wrong mm-hmm. in the way I acted. And I will, you know, I will remember that, and I will be better about that in the future.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And just one more thing for all the ladies listening. A little bit of dating advice. The guys that are dark and mysterious are always assholes. Do not date them. They're dark and mysterious because they have nothing to say because they're boring as fuck. And also, they try to make themselves out to be dark because they're just fucking depressed, and you don't want to take in that energy and make yourself, if you are a depressed person, like I am generally, you know, I feel like without Dan, I was very depressed in my life. If you bring another depressed person or sad person into that mix, it just feeds the despair. You know, it doesn't, you think maybe, well, this person can relate to me and maybe we could get better together. Just find someone that is happy and makes you happy. At the end of the day, always go for the nice person, because the nice person isn't going to bring you down and is going to talk with you and going to compliment you, you know, like compliment you as in like peanut butter and jelly, not compliment you as in you're pretty today. Right. That's that my piece nice of dating too. Advice. Well, of course, you're very good about that, too. But then when you don't say anything, I feel like, well, actually, it's when you do say something that I feel weird, because it's like, well, every time you don't say something, does that mean God. I look bad?
That is not what that means at all. No.
Anyway, so Terrace House.
Yes. Sorry, folks, for the detour. Here's the thing, too. We're talking about stuff. Let's ask folks here, the folks that have followed us for this entire Terrace House journey and listened to Painting the Stream. This is still new to us. You know, we've done like, what, 29 episodes of this or whatever now. Oh my gosh,
and you're like a hardened podcast veteran. This is so new to me. Think about how new it is to me.
Well, the thing is, like, I'm new to being the one that is like hosting and driving and like and structuring a show and things like that. So this is really interesting to me because I do, like, when I say at the end of every episode that I want feedback, you know, and to tweet at us or email us, I mean that because I want to learn what we can do better. And so I know that the concept of the show is obviously, hey, we watch things on streaming services and we talk about it. And I know sometimes, like, you know, my work at Giant Bomb, it is technically us talking about video games. But some of the stuff people like the most is when we do.
It's a website about video games.
It is a website about video games. When we do kind of detour into other things and have off-topic conversations and weird things that have nothing to do with video games, some people really like that. But then also some people seem annoyed by that sometimes when we go too far off track. So I am just genuinely very curious if people want to email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com or tweet us at panthestream. Like, I don't know. Do you guys like the when we go on detours or whatever? Because, like, there is some part of me that's, like, stressing since I'm not used to, like, hosting and stuff. Like, oh, God, do we need to get back on track? Or, you know, I just be honest. And we will adjust accordingly. Mm. But you're just fun to talk to, Bach.
Aw, gee whiz. I think the people are here for the Terrace House, not for me rambling on and on.
Well, I figure at this point we're on the last one of four Terrace House episodes. So yeah. If you're listening at this point, you know, thanks for sticking around.
Mm.
All right. So well, thank you very much for the nice words. And may I say that you are a delight to be married to.
Oh, gee.
Yes.
I just go on this fucking 30-minute spiel about how you're the greatest gift in my entire life. And you're just like, yeah, you're a pretty nice woman to have around.
We're 35 minutes into a podcast.
You're right, I guess.
Do you want me to do a special episode where I just talk about how great you are? Because I would need more than another half hour.
Can you imagine how uncomfortable that would make me?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would be biting my tongue to refute every single thing that you say.
Every time I compliment you, you make a face like you just stepped in shit. It's like, oh, I wish I hadn't heard that.
I mean, I think maybe, I don't know. I just am sure that I'm not Hitler, but I'm a bad person. I mean, I've never killed anyone, but I don't think I'm that great.
All right, I'm not allowing this.
I mean, I'm not evil, but I've never really contributed anything to
that's
society.
That's completely insane. All right, that's our cue to get back on track
all
here.
All right, let's proceed. Okay, so
Mizuki,
she, I thought that was kind of, honestly, I'm always rooting for Mizuki. She's my homegirl, but I was kind of disappointed in her when she did that because Arisa had told her, like, at this point, she had, like, plainly said to Mizuki, I have feelings for Armand, or I'm starting to have feelings for him, or whatever. So for her to then go and ask him out.
Very, very directly.
Very
just
directly.
Like, hey, let's go get food sometime.
Yes.
And it's like, we're going to go get food.
Let's romance.
Yeah, it wasn't like a cutesy thing. It was like, oh, if you're free. It was like, let's go get dinner.
We're getting dinner.
Yes. I could see why you would think that way. I could see why it could seem a little, like, and that, I don't know if impolite's the word.
Yeah,
or just,
I mean,
like,
I was kind of thinking about it from, like, Arisa's perspective.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I would say, though, that, like, I was okay with it because as just a, like, hey, I thought I had something here. It looks like it's slipping. Let's just give one more shot and see if he wants to get dinner. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we could just kind of clear the air or whatever, which is exactly what happens.
Right.
They go, she gets the haircut, they clear the air. You know,
and Armand's like, dang, you look good with that haircut.
Yes. And then she, you know, she handles it really
and
well.
And then she giggles.
Yes. And she asks about him and Arissa. And he's honest about it. He's like, yeah, we're into each other. And she deals with it just so nicely and so respectfully and everything. And just being like, you know what? I'm rooting for you. That's great.
Everyone should be more like Mizuki.
Yeah. It did not seem awkward or anything. It was a selfless thing. She had to be disappointed. But, you know, she wasn't going to try to butt into a thing, which is a bit different than what Mr. Yuki did. Because Yuki sees this thing happening, and like Arissa comes in, and all the dudes like her, and Yuki is like, oh god, okay, looks like Armand's kind of moving on this here. I guess I got to get in and try to ask her out.
Yeah.
And so he asks her out to get food while they're already getting food. They're getting food.
I think he asked her on like a day trip, and he kind of frames it as like, I haven't tried the car yet. I haven't driven this car yet.
Right.
Like maybe we could go somewhere in it. And it was obvious that it was a date, and she was very obviously not interested.
Yes.
And she kept saying like, well, you know, I want to go to Costco. Maybe we could.
The least datey place you could ever go to.
Us in the group can go to Costco. And he kept insisting like, no, you know, just you and me or whatever. And it was awkward. Like, I mean, I felt bad for both of them because, like, on one hand, you feel bad that Arissa's in that position because it's like she made it pretty obvious, like, and she was so trying to be polite about it.
Yes. I don't know how many times she could say, like, no, it'd be cool if everyone could go. Yeah. Also, I did really want to check out Costco. And it just keeps going ping-ponging back and forth for a little bit. And I, at some point, like, I would not have blamed her if she was like, listen, I'm trying to be nice about this. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking to go on a date with you.
Right.
You know? And then he does one more past that, where they're all sitting around the living room playing a card game, having a good time. And Yuki does come up and like pulls her away from the card game to try again and ask her out on a date. Mm-hmm. And she basically says like, no, I'm just not into the date idea. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's the other side of the Mizuki thing, where Mizuki did the like, I'm going to ask one more time. Mm-hmm. And it was clear it didn't work out. And she was like, cool. Okay, I'm rooting for you. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Yuki asked numerous times in one sitting and got a bunch of obvious no's and then asked again
in
the card game. So like he was a little pushier on that.
He was.
He should have read what was going on there better.
Totally. And I was rooting for him with the Yuriko stuff.
Yes.
But I feel like this just came out of nowhere. It was like, well, I find her attractive. But we haven't, like, I haven't seen them talk at all. I mean, they got drinks and stuff, but it was obvious that it was her, Arissa, and Armand that were really, like, kind of hitting it off more. And he was always just kind of a third wheel.
Yeah.
It just seemed, it was weird. And, you know, I feel like he should have just taken her up on the Costco thing, gone with everyone to Costco. Because Costco can be
fun. They got great prices. They got bulk items. I love Costco.
I think, we would always go to BJ's just because they would have, like, a free 1 month trial in the newspaper all the time. But it's just like Costco, except you can use, like, manufacturer coupons at BJ's, which is pretty neat.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
We should totally get a membership to one of those bulk places.
Once we get a house out in the suburbs, we'll do that. We are going to be a fucking suburban-ass couple. Just living in the suburbs. It's going to be great and boring.
Dogs.
And awesome. Yeah. I can't wait.
Dogs.
So we're talking about Yuki and Mizuki here, both kind of failing at, you know, things are not shaking out for them. Mm-hmm. There was never really any interest in them with the other person at all. Mm-hmm. But they both kind of talk about it and they're like, man, shit's not really working out here.
Seems like a natural endpoint.
Yep. And they both decide they're going to leave. Which, man, there is something about when these people leave the house that is very bittersweet. It reminds me of, like, you know, the dorm, the year would be over at college and everyone moves out. And it's like, man, we had all these memories. We had all these times together. And now it's over. Like, it is a mm-hmm. bittersweet thing. It's mm-hmm. not someone dying, but it is the feeling of, like, losing something that was special and good and everything. And, you know, you talk about shows and stuff kind of, like, impacting me. Mm-hmm. And usually they don't at all. But there's those fucking shots when, you know, in the morning when they've got the luggage and everything. And you see the door closing behind them. And it does kind of, like, man, that's... that's sad that that's over, that I enjoyed watching their stories.
Do you find that when something is happening to you that you end up remembering as something significant, do you find that while it is happening, you almost feel like you're in the passenger seat and kind of just watching it through like a TV screen or something? Like, I always feel
we were watching this on a TV screen.
No, I mean when things are happening to you personally that are significant.
Huh.
I feel like there are times when I think to myself, oh, I'm probably going to remember this. Like last Friday when we were at my parents' house with Tommy and Gabby and uh-huh. Ben, and we were like playing
Codenames.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Like I thought to myself, like, this is probably going to be one of those nights I remember. But then like it's so hard to completely appreciate what's going on when it's happening to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you
like,
also
at
just,
the time it's happening to you.
I don't know. It's something that I try to be very mindful of is mm-hmm. being in the moment and being mm-hmm. present, because like I'm someone who does spend a lot of time up in my own head, you know, and just kind of overthinking things.
Right.
And it's funny how I say overthinking things when earlier we were talking about how I just don't register things at all. But like sometimes I do overthink.
Right.
And I mean, that's a big part of why I do meditation, everything is like that is a way to kind of train myself to like be in the present moment sure. and everything. So, yeah, I see what you're saying. And I do
that's
have
that's interesting. I didn't think of it from that perspective.
Oh.
Like you do have a tendency to overthink things. And I wonder if that means like it distracts you from like the special things that are happening before you. But are you able in retrospect to appreciate these things?
Oh, I always do. But I try not to like in the moment when something special or fun is happening. You know, I'm not the one that feels like you need to take a million pictures or something. Like, I am trying to just be there in the moment.
Totally. Yeah, I'm not a picture taker either.
I mean, I want to take a few. Either. Like, if we go on a trip or something.
Well, you know, trips are one thing. I mean, when you're looking at beautiful landscapes, that's one thing. But.
Right. But, like, if we're just having, like, a nice walk along the river yeah. or something, I don't feel the need to, like, you know, we're not taking selfies and posting them and shit. You know, we're just enjoying the walk.
Totally. You know what? I think, like, trying to live in the moment, it isn't necessarily equal to necessarily appreciate it, because when it's happening before you just want to enjoy it, and if you take time to appreciate it, that kind of removes you from the enjoyment of it. I think maybe having these memories that are so special is probably the greatest thing that we have, right? Like all these fun memories, like just throughout our lives, and whether or not we acted a certain way during them is kind of besides the point. It's always just fun to look back and reflect on these things that,
yeah.
especially things that we've shared together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and, so, and you're not worried about the things you were thinking or being up in your head or whatever.
Exactly.
You just remember the actual thing, you know, like it was
yeah.
just like a painting, you know, you don't remember all the tiny little details like, oh, you stepped in some dog shit or you were a little anxious or something. No, you just remember the actual.
I think the dog shit would be a big detail that I would remember.
I guess that is a very specific detail.
But
like,
I was,
you know, if you had a stomach ache, you're not going to remember that. But
totally.
You're going to remember like, oh, when we were seeing that sunset or whatever,
right.
you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when they were leaving. I was thinking like, I wonder if they're like appreciating like as they're walking out, if they're going to remember everything from like what they were wearing to, you know, what the last thing they said to everyone is and all
yeah.
that stuff.
Well,
know.
If they didn't, it's all documented on Netflix. So
totally.
They have that
yeah,
benefit.
They have that. Yeah, absolutely. That what a gift, right? To have this important part of your life, you know, this transformative experience recorded
yeah.
for you forever.
No, it'd be an incredible like video diary to look back on.
Mm-hmm.
So they're gone.
Sayonara.
Yes, they were two very good characters.
They were
at
good.
Times, I had issues with Yuki, but overall, I have a very
up and down
fond...
with Yuki. Mizuki was
Mizuki
I
kind
feel
of a rock
the whole way.
She's a rock. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
she's definitely one of my favorites of the whole show. At one point here, Armand and Arissa have a dinner together and have this very silly, like, oh, do you like anyone in the house?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Do you like anyone in the house? I think so. Like, it's just so fucking clear they're talking about each other.
Right.
It's kind of cute, but it's also like, just say, like, you guys are clearly
mm-hmm.
got a thing for
mm-hmm.
each other. So yeah, like, outside of the stuff we've talked about, I guess the main kind of through line is like Armand's training for his kickboxing match, and
which he wins.
He wins. Most of the people come. I think Uchi was working or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he has a night. I can't remember if it was to celebrate it or something, but he has like a really drunk night with
mm-hmm.
Arissa, and he doesn't like he blacked out
mm-hmm.
and like threw up in the bed and like had a. Eye was fucked up or something. He said he didn't.
Unclear on that, on how that happened.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've had some rough nights like that, but I've never been injured. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've never had like I've never been in a fight when I was drunk. Or
that's
I've never
good.
Hurt
I'm
myself. I'm not a combative drunk at all, or sober person at all. But yeah, I've never even like he said walked into a door.
It's
or something.
So obvious when you are drunk, not because you're loud at all. But because you're just such a mush ball of love, and you're obviously your eyes are all glassy, and you just blink a lot, and you just are just like, Yonk, you're the best.
Ah,
you're just so sweet.
I think I take after my dad in that because my dad is.
No,
very...
your dad has phases.
Exactly. I was just going to say he's the most predictable man in the world as far as like we feel like our mutual friend Trevin, he talks about like it's a DEFCON stages or whatever. Where it's like, okay, we're at stage 3, which is okay. I love everyone, Paul. Where he's putting his arm around everyone. Ah, I love you. Ah, Trevin, you're great. Ah, I give you shit, but I love you. You're the best. And stage 4 is I'm tired, Paul. Where he
mm-hmm.
starts complaining about being tired. And then stage 5, Paul is like, I'm grumpy because I'm tired and we're still out.
Yeah.
And then stage 6 is excited because he finds out he
second
gets to
wind.
Leave and he's going to get Taco Bell on the way
mm-hmm.
home. And then it's eating Taco Bell and then collapsing.
My favorite phase is I think phase 1 or maybe phase 2 when he just starts pointing at everyone.
Oh, yeah. That's I always point it out, and he always takes his other hand and puts his point down because he gets self-conscious about it. I drew a graph on a napkin once where one axis was amount of drinks Paul has had, and one axis is amount of pointing, and it is just a direct diagonal line up. Like, he's just, hey, look at that! Look at that guy! Look at that guy's beard! What's going on with that? I'm gonna go smoke this cigarette! As he points at the cigarette, and then points at the door he's gonna walk out. It's like, we understand the process, Dad. You don't have to point at everything. Did I ever tell you about the time he got slammed on a car hood because of his pointing?
No.
He, believe it or not, we were at the Red Balloon.
When was this?
This was years ago. This was probably a couple years before I met you. We were at the Red Balloon with Derek, a mutual friend. And my dad was very drunk, and he saw a lady there that he was attracted to. Mm-hmm. And he's like, holy Lord, and like pointed at her. Yeah, I think he didn't mean to be like, he's not the type that's going to be like a jerk to the girl or
right.
anything.
No, your dad's but he not
was,
a jerk.
He was just so struck by how attracted sure. he was. He's like, and just like naturally pointed at her. And it was like the next thing he knew, like he realized what he did and put his arm down. Mm-hmm. And then he noticed next time he looked over that the girl was talking to her like giant boyfriend.
Okay.
It's like giant Kansas farmer looking dude. Mm-hmm. And she was like pointing at my dad. And my dad's like, oh boy.
Oh no.
And so, he had to like pay or something, so me and Derek went out front, and I heard this kind of like scuffle going on.
Oh,
I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was drunk, and I was like, oh, is there gonna be some hilarious parking lot fight going on? And I start filming on my phone, not realizing what's going on.
Did you film it?
Yes, and I have looked so many times for this footage. Mm. It's blurry, shitty, but like there's people blocking mm-hmm. and stuff. It's not great footage, but I don't know where it is. But apparently farmer boyfriend guy grabbed my dad, took him out front, and then like there's a truck out front, and he fucking like slammed my dad into the hood
oh
before
God.
People like broke it up and everything. My dad had a huge bruise down his side. And, I mean, he was fine, but, like, he still gives me shit about, like, yeah, I know you'd be great if I ever got in a fight. I know you'd be great backup because I look over after almost getting murdered by this dude and there's my dumbass son filming it.
Jeez. Like, also, what a gross overreaction to being pointed at.
Yeah, I mean, my dad should not have been just egregiously pointing at women he found attractive, but I know he didn't mean ill by it.
Not getting pointed at is ideal, but yeah. I mean, I'm not yes. saying that I would order you to kill someone if someone didn't.
I mean, that is kind of it feels like kind of a Kansas, like, oh, you look at my fucking girl. Like, okay. there are a lot of those dudes mm-hmm. in Kansas, especially at the kind of bars we go to.
Yeah, well, that's a fucking questionable choice of yours. You always like, you only like a bar if it's like the shittiest, like, hole in the ground.
There's
like, you have to walk in and see like a bunch of people that look like they would murder us, and then you're like, all right, this is where I want to get comfy.
At least they're genuine.
And like it's always got to be like a hot older bartender lady, I feel like.
What?
And like just a curious assortment of people.
I think the way my dad and I always describe the way me and my dad always describe our type of bar is ones where it just gets every type of person from every walk of life, because we find that so interesting to like hear people's stories. And like there are so many places you go to, like I've never been a club guy, because like the couple times I went to clubs in college, it's all just the same fucking douchebag with a pop collar, and like they're all just wearing the same thing and acting the same.
Sure.
And it's just like annoying. Like we like going to these genuine fucking dives where it's like you might be talking to an 80-year-old war veteran one night, or then it's like, oh, this weird bachelorette party comes in and tries to karaoke some song they don't know the lyrics to. And so you just never know what you're going to see or mm-hmm. who you're going to meet on a given night.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, the Vegas Lounge in Minneapolis, the Red Balloon in Kansas, like it's those type of bars like are just very interesting to
us. Well, I mean, I'm not saying I don't enjoy them. They're fun.
Yeah.
I just, I don't know. I don't have a bar preference. Definitely don't like clubs. And I've never been much of a drinker. So I guess my ideal bar would just have really good music. I guess Duff's beer bar. Is pretty cool because they have great music. It's like a metal bar.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Anyway, that was Armand having a drunk night. And then kind of a sweet thing the next day. He's incredibly hungover. And, like, I felt for him here because I've had so many days where I'm extremely hungover. But then you wake up and you're like, oh, God, I have to do a thing. I have to be walking around and talking and not just laying in bed with the lights off. And you can tell he's struggling, but he's still, you know, being very sweet to her. He gives her this scarf on a Ferris wheel, and, you know, he has to take several trips to the bathroom to throw up and stuff like that. But it's still, like, she doesn't seem to mind, and he's being very sweet to her and everything. Mm. So kind of a sweet, kind of funny situation, too. But, yeah, that's where we kind of leave things off.
They tease the new people. Obviously, we're not going to meet them this
yes.
time around.
But... seems like a construction worker fella. And then a girl who's on the phone with her dad. And
she seems very young.
Yes. And then the most tragic thing that happened in these 18 episodes is you talk about things affecting me and sticking with me. And this is definitely one of those
What's
things that emotionally I'm still processing. the child panelist that never talks. Oh. He's leaving.
He's leaving. Yeah, I'm really sorry. Yeah. To see him go, because he contributed so much to the panel discussion.
Yeah, it was tough. Hmm. But we still have that hilarious comedian guy that I like, which the guy with the glasses. Which...
There's the guy that looks like Ray Romano.
Yes,
the guy with glasses. He's really funny. I really like you. That's the older lady.
Yeah, all the women were really cool.
Yeah, they're all
actually cool. I like them all quite a bit.
Yeah, they have. At first, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this, but then like I appreciated how it gave us context, and then as the show went on, I not only appreciated that, but I also just really liked their personalities, and I thought they were really funny and stuff.
So. Yeah. And somebody actually tweeted to the Panda Stream account saying that the glasses comedian guy, he was a former DDT heavy metalweight champion, which DDT is this really kind of jokey Japanese wrestling organization. Mm-hmm. That if you've ever seen like GIFs or clips of like Kota Ibushi wrestling
Kenny in a
forest, that's where I'm going with that. Right. Yeah. So if you ever see like clips of like Kota Ibushi wrestling in like a forest and like jumping off dumb bullshit, mm-hmm. that's probably DDT. Mm-hmm. And so that is where the Golden Lover started and where Kenny Omega and Kota. So like that panelist has won a title there. I guess there's some match where you're shooting fireworks out of his ass or something. Mm. So interesting guy.
All right.
It seems like someone whose career I would like to follow. but yeah, I was kind of thinking now that we're wrapping up in the Terrace House, I think the show was really good at showing us everyone in their element at least once, where it's like you see Armand in his kickboxing story. You see Yuki do his tap dancing thing mm-hmm. at Stove. You see Uchi cutting hair numerous times. You see Minori's whole like modeling thing. Not a ton of Makoto. I feel like, was there one time they went and saw him practice baseball?
Yeah.
I don't think there wasn't like a big thing. They talked about
it.
I can't remember them actually being there. Maybe he pissed everyone off.
They were at the gym with him one time.
They were?
Yeah, they went to the gym with him.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like maybe he didn't get as much of a like, hey, here's him and his element.
The thing that I liked the most about this show, I mean, obviously we were super into it because we just wanted to see what was going to happen with everyone. But it didn't reduce people down to like tropes or stereotypes so many other reality TV shows do. And because of that, you could really see the nuances in their personality. You really appreciate the small things that happen. Because in real life, like in movies, everything is such a grand gesture. In TV, everything is like, it's always this big extravagant thing that mm-hmm. would never necessarily happen in real life. Even when it comes to just like asking someone out or whatever, it's always this big thing. In real life, it's so much more subtle.
Yes.
And this show lets you appreciate these really subtle things. Like Arisa and Armand holding hands mm-hmm. while they go up the mountain. Like if that wasn't a movie, like that would just be a moment. But in this... we really appreciate it because we know how much it means. And I know, like, because I think about my life and, like, all the times, like, I first held hands with a future partner. You know what I mean? And it just makes you feel, like, all butterflies and
yeah.
stuff. Like, so you feel this stuff along with them because it's so easy to relate to them because they're portrayed as real people because they are obviously real people.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I like most. And it's aside from the obvious, like, window into Japanese culture and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I absolutely love the show, and I can't wait to watch more.
It is probably the most effective reality show I've ever seen in terms of just getting to know these cast members as people mm-hmm. and feeling like you're watching mm-hmm. actual reality. You know, like there have been so many shows that use that term, and the term is just thrown around a lot ever since like maybe yeah. Survivor. But this is, I think, the closest I have seen a program get to the promise of reality TV. Mm-hmm. And again, I can't claim to know exactly what was on the cutting room floor or what was kind of manipulated or whatever. But I'll say as a viewer, I didn't notice anything. There are a lot of shows where you can notice. It's just
obvious.
So obvious, you know, where this, it just kind of feels like you're a fly on the wall.
Right.
And I can't say enough. It's a tremendous, tremendous show. I'd say without a doubt my favorite thing we've watched for Painting the Stream.
Agreed.
And with that, let's go ahead and do our final Terrace House Power Ranking.
Terrace House Power Rankings!
All right, so I feel like, you know, not a ton happening in these episodes.
Yeah, we could probably shoot through this pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there were very clear things in the past of like, you know, that fucking second one's like, well, Makoto's going to the bottom of both ours. But mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and do the power rankings for this set of episodes here. So in last place, I had Uchi. I just kind of felt he just didn't do...
Yeah, like, I had Uchi as well.
Yeah, it was kind of him at his worst, I think. I mean, he was never really a dick or anything, but he was just so kind of nothing
passive,
in these.
And you just want to shake him and be like, you have to show this girl how you feel about her.
Yeah, you got to make this thing work between you two. Right. You're not showing any passion or right. you're not showing that you care. That was your six?
That was my six, yeah.
Oh, okay, so my five goes hand in hand with that, where it's Minori.
Same.
Okay, yeah, I think both of them we were just kind of frustrated with this
mm-hmm.
time.
Totally.
And it's like, you just had to kind of be upset with both of them. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what are you guys doing? Like, do you guys even want to be together? You know?
Right, right.
So, yeah. Wow. Interesting. Four, I had Mizuki.
Same.
No shit. I wonder if we're going to have the exact same list here. That'd be amazing. We actually have not looked at each other's list at all. Yeah, Mizuki, I think we're probably on the same boat about how, like, okay, I know you were maybe a little more negative on her trying one more time. I was okay with it as long as it was that one more time.
I mean, that's exactly how I felt. Like, yeah. She's been a rock the whole way through, like you said. That was the only thing that bothered me a little bit. And also just the fact that nothing really happened with her that would, you know, bring her rank up or her rank down.
So. Yeah. Well, actually, I did really respect the way she dealt with it at dinner when Armand
was like...
Oh, yeah,
of course.
Like, I just think she seems like an incredibly solid person.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If we did an overall power rankings, like, she would be very near the top.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think she's ever had first place for me. Maybe the first week she had first place for me, but if we did an overall, I think she would be, just by virtue of the fact that she just seems like someone I want to be friends with.
Yeah, totally. So number three, I had Yuki.
Same.
Wow. I think we're probably in the same boat. I was not thrilled with the way he kept going, yeah. Even though he couldn't. I just felt like he was kind of oblivious and couldn't see the writing
totally.
On the wall.
I mean, props to him for going for it, I guess. And, you know, he has my sympathies because he got rejected again. And I think he's a very talented guy who I hope will find a woman that appreciates his talents and stuff. Yeah, you know, that was annoying that he did that. But other than that, nothing particularly egregious. I think if we did like you said, a retrospective, I think he would be near the top for me.
He's probably the one in your book that gained the most, I would assume, because you had him at dead last, I think, on the first episode.
Yeah,
because he was the first one to do kind of a rough scene.
That was bad. That was questionable. But you know what? You have to think, too, like, we're just seeing little bits and pieces. Everyone has moments like that where they regret something they said, or they took something too far without even realizing it, you know, before, you know, you don't necessarily know how your words are affecting someone. So,
and like I was saying earlier when we were talking about our own relationship, about how, like, I like to, you know, when called out on something, or if I like to reflect on my own behavior and see what I can do to change.
Yeah.
And I think he did exactly that, where he was acting kind of jerky at first. But I remember him talking to Yuriko outside and her bringing it up to him, and he seemed to kind of understand, and he didn't do anything like that again.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we didn't see everything, but, like, he seemed to be well liked, and I liked him a lot. Number two, I've got Armand.
All right, I have Arisa.
Ah, that's two. The turnaround.
Yeah.
Okay, this was tough. I think I originally put Armand at number one. I switched it around. I feel like they're kind of interchangeable here. They are both just like two very very likable people that seem good for each other.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate her being patient with Armand during their date. I mean, she could have turned that into a thing. Like, she could have made a stink about it, but she seemed to have a great time despite him being, you know, a little uncomfortable. And you know, it was cool to see her do her hat stuff. She's obviously a really creative person, and she seems great. She just seems direct and, you know, someone who has passion about what she does and is reasonable emotionally.
And Arisa, I feel, isn't like the loudest personality in the episodes we've seen, but again, just seems really solid. You know, just you would have to really stretch to think of a complaint about her from the episodes we've seen her in.
Yeah.
And granted, again, these two are ones that we have not seen that much, and I'm sure at this point we probably still had good things to say about Makoto, but I don't know. We'll see if we come back to these characters, because, like, we will see more of these if we continue with Boys and Girls in the City, because I feel like...
Which I think if we do continue with Panning the Stream, I mean, not, you know, not next week, but in the future, if we return to Terra's house, it should absolutely be part two of this.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. Yes, so, you know, not making any, like, scheduling yet, but, like, I do think we should come back to this, because we've not come anywhere near the end of, I think, Arisa or Armand yet, and we're also about to meet two new people. And then I just kind of get the feeling that Minori and Uchi have got to be leaving soon, right?
I agree. Yes,
I think so. So, yeah, I think we're going to see a much different show going forward.
Totally.
But that will have to wait. Bonk, you don't have to wait if you want to hop into other seasons.
Oh, thank you, Dan Reichert.
You don't have to thank me. Just watch the shows you want.
I know, but I don't want you to feel like... I don't want you to say that and then on the inside be like, I wanted to watch it with you.
I mean, in a perfect world, I would love to watch a whole...
Oh, can we get a perfect world?
I know, but I'm also going to be out of town a lot, and we also have a billion other things.
Okay. That sounds good.
Really had to twist your arm there, didn't I? So that is going to be it for this journey through Terrace House.
It's been great so far, and I can't wait to return.
Yes, and again, if you have stuck around for these four episodes of Terrace House or watched along with us, I think that's super cool. Mm-hmm. This is a really special show, I think, and I'm really glad that we got to see it. And I hope through Painting the Stream, you know, with our very modest following, I hope we were able to introduce some other people to it that maybe would not have heard of it or watched it otherwise. And while I'm on the subject of our followers and stuff, you know, it's coming. But I just want to thank everyone who has helped out with the listener support
thing.
Thank
you so much.
Yeah, like this is... I've said it before, but this is not a thing that we are doing to, like, we're not trying to make this the biggest podcast in the world. We're not trying to get rich off this. Mm-mm. You know, we do have some supporters helping us out through the listener support program right now. But just to give you kind of a sense, as of this recording, we're at the point where we could probably get like a Chipotle burrito bowl a month.
Sweet.
So it's like, we're not doing this to get rich.
Yeah, no, it's just, it really is heartwarming to see the support.
It is.
And that's, you know, that extends to any like nice tweets as well or messages.
Yeah, tweets or just, you know, I check all the time to see how many people are listening to it. So, you know, I track like the Terrace House stuff people seem to really enjoy. So it's been so nice to know that people are finding Painting the Stream and everything through it. So thanks to anyone who's just listening. A special shout out to anyone who has helped through listener support. We've got a handful now. And thank you so much, even if it's at the dollar level or no level at all. Seriously, thank you for your support of the podcast. There are also, if you want to do $5 or $10 a month, that's all at PaintingTheStream.com, and you can click the little button there. If you're on your phone, you can do Apple Pay. If you're on a browser, it's just a real secure like credit card thing. Super easy, cancel anytime. But again, can't thank you enough for supporting this. This has been my favorite stretch of episodes for sure.
Same.
So yeah, we're going to move on to something that will almost certainly be just as impactful to our lives and to the show. I just have to imagine it's an equal level of quality. Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan.
Yes. So we are going to watch, the John Krasinski Amazon Prime original Jack Ryan, which I think, you know, we've got our skepticism
about. Talk about subtlety.
Subtlety?
Yeah, Terrace House with all its subtlety. Going right on to Jack
Ryan. Oh, Jack Ryan. Yeah, yeah. Is there symbolism in Jack Ryan? Because I just thought it was about a spy guy.
No, it's not subtle at all. It's so fucking heavy-handed. And it's just about...
We'll cover it.
We'll cover it.
Yes.
I mean, but it's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's what it is.
It is what it is.
Yes, that's the subtitle. It's Jack Ryan, : Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, : It is what it is. So that'll be next week on Painting the Stream. Man. So go ahead and... watch Jack Ryan if you want to.
No pressure.
Or you can just...
We're going to do it for you.
Yeah, you can just listen to us talk about it. It is what it is. So that'll be next week on Painting the Stream. I feel like I've already listed the ways you can give feedback several times in this episode, so I won't waste your time with that now.
Thanks, because I'm a busy woman.
You are. We got places to be. We actually do. So
I am kind of a busy woman.
Yes. We got shit going on here. So yes, thanks to Tom Onda, of course, for
That's
the theme
bro.
Song. That is your brother.
I love him.
And thanks to you, Bianca.
Oh, thank you.
It is great doing this. And like I've said before, this has been a tremendous stretch of episodes. It's been very fun to do with you. Continue to watch without me.
All right,
if you must. But know that I would love to be there in spirit, even if I am not in New York City with you.
All right, maybe I'll tweet my reactions or something.
Oh, there we go. All right, that'll be it. We're winding down. We will see you all next week. Thank you for listening.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.